sunshine. Give me a do. Give me something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing mountain dew. So give me my good friends. Give me a do.
Grab some friends and an ice cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew.
A radio show host called Paul Gallant.
It's Gallant.
That's a G.
Yo, and George.
Thanks, Joe.
Okay. Yeah.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Gallant, George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Happy Monday. Welcome in. Sean Mapes filling in for Paul Gallant here on the show. Paul will be back tomorrow. Austin Rodriguez behind the glass. And What a good weekend. The vibes are good right now. The Astros win 2 out of 3 versus the Tigers. We'll talk about Christian Javier in the second segment. We're going to be positive vibes only in the first segment. The Rockets got the 3rd pick in the NBA draft.
Yeah.
The lottery system works.
Don't listen to what anyone said about or says about the players in this draft. Just be excited. They moved up 6 spots to the 3rd pick.
Yeah, this is not a great draft. I did find on a side here before we get into the Astros, ESPN needs to like figure out their broadcast stuff. Putting someone on the broadcast like Kendrick Perkins, who just during like you're there to pump up the NBA draft, and then just be like, yeah, I've never watched any of these French guys. Okay, I also haven't.
Yeah,
but I'm not getting paid by ESPN to sit there on draft coverage and pretend like I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, I would at least have watched some clips just to lie about it, just to have something to go to. But yeah, that's kind of the general consensus.
What are we doing, Park?
With this draft is that it's like, yeah, there's a bunch of Euro guys that it's not like Victor where he was a Euro guy, but we were able to watch him. We saw him coming
up,
and there's very few like actual college players that are. They're being mocked that high. So.
No, yeah, it's a weird NBA draft for the Rockets to end up in the top 4 once again. And we'll get into that throughout the show as well. But the Astros win 2 out of 3 this weekend. It starts on Friday night. Framber Valdez, pretty good. And then the lineup is really the story in what, the 8th inning. They get that late 4-run rally to beat the Tigers 5-2. And that was, it was nice to see just like some momentum start there. Saturday is obviously a disaster with Christian Javier on the mound, and then yesterday Justin Verlander is as good as Justin Verlander can basically get beat. They win 9-3, so they take 2 out of 3 versus the Tigers. They've won 3 of their last 4 going back to Friday. I heard John and Lance talking about that that Eric Layden and John had their taps bet, in which Eric lost, and since then the Astros have won 3 out of 4. So if the Astros season turns around, we have to thank Eric.
I'm okay with that.
Eric is the savior of the season, the Astros season, maybe.
Yes, if he becomes the, I don't know, the Sister Jean. I don't know who the famous Lucky Charms for teams in the past. If he himself, as a human man, is the Tombstone Houston Chronicle picture. I don't know. I'm working stuff out as we're talking. But yes, I mean, honestly, even yesterday's game, for the first 5 innings, you thought, oh, the Astros are going to blow, like, such a good Verlander start. Like,
yeah.
Of course, the game where Verlander gives up 2 hits in 7 innings, like, it's going to be 0-0 heading into the 6th inning, where you still are, like, doing some pitch count math of how many more pitches. And he was pretty good on pitch count, so... But, yeah, they score in the 6th. They get, honestly, in the 7th, I was like, okay, 4, I feel better now.
Mm-hmm.
And then, obviously, we saw what they did in the 8th inning, where that was like, okay, I can turn this game off now.
Could this be the comeback of the century if the Astros make the playoffs from 2-8-1 on the text line? No? Weren't they 15-30 when the Tombstone came out?
Yes, right now they have a better record than the
Tombstone. Yeah, so no, it's not. It wouldn't even be the... The best comeback story of the Astros franchise.
The Astros 20,
like,
yeah, 20 so, years.
But it would be awesome. And I don't know if I feel that strongly, like, to say that the season's going to fully turn around at this point. No. But you got some help with the Rockies sweeping the Rangers over the weekend. You know, the Mariners went 2 out of their 3 in their series. And now you play the A's for, what, a 4-game series. So we talked about this on Friday. Like, if this season was going to have a miraculous turnaround and a story for the decade. Yeah. You know, like this would be the biggest story of the Astros' golden run to start this poorly. And if they make another run and they get to an eighth straight ALCS and they get to another World Series, like we'll laugh at where the season started. We'll laugh at the fact that Bob Nightingale is dropping articles, which we'll get to as well, insinuating that, well, basically Joe Spada's lost the clubhouse at this point, is the way it kind of reads. It's not that harsh criticism that we saw last year when we had the Chaz McCormick story, but it's not great that you already have stories like that. But the positive news is you win 2 out of 3, and Kyle Tucker is incredible. Like, that's one of my biggest takeaways from this weekend. He's awesome.
Kyle Tucker being able to maintain the hot streak that he's on, wasn't able to maintain the home run streak, but that's all right. You'll still take it. They're impactful home runs too. It feels like it was the same thing in the Yankee series. I guess one of them was just like a first inning home run, which was impactful for one inning, and then the Astros got rocked. But yeah, they're playing good baseball right now. This is what we need to see from this team for, like we said, this extended stretch where they're playing the Angels and the A's 10 times, and they have a Brewers series mixed in there. If they can play, I mean, obviously taking 3 out of 4 every single time, that is asking a lot. But if they can play up to the standard and still be 4 or 5 games back at the end of the month, I think that would be a mission accomplished for June, because them just being close still, them being 6.5 back as we speak right now, while I understand that's, I'm only talking about making up a game and a half, it is still, at a certain point, the Astros need to show that they can play good baseball. And this weekend in Detroit, they were showing that they can at least play good baseball 2 out of 3 nights.
Yeah, and look, it's, the record is one thing. They are 10 games under 500. But I saw Michael Schwab tweet this out. The Astros at 40 games in 2023 were 4 games back of first place in the AL West.
Yeah.
The Astros at 40 games this year are 6.5 games back. It's a 2.5 game difference.
Yeah.
And we know how the end of last year went. If they just played mediocre baseball against the worst teams in the league at the end of the year, they run away with the AL West. Instead, they had to grind it out to what the last day of the season, the last series of the season. So that's one of the biggest differences is just like, yes, it's your record, but you're still right there. Like, if you, there's still hope to be had. I understand why, like Eric the Driver says here, they're so far in the hole, they honestly can't afford to win series 2-1. They need to start sweeping. I get why you view it this way. I get it. I get why, you know, Whiskey here, Coffee Whiskey here says a bad team beat another bad team. Nothing special. I get it. But if there's hope, if there's a chance that this thing is going to turn around and they are going to make the playoffs, this is the stretch that we've been focusing on for the last week and a half, that they have to play better. And what you got from Verlander, what you got from Fromber, hell, what you got out of Hunter Brown out of the bullpen, what you've been getting from Blanco, it shows the signs of encouragement and your offense. Alex Bregman was very good this weekend. Jeremy Pena, whether he bats second or bats fourth, has been a complete turnaround story and shows last year was definitely a sophomore slump. So it's the vibes are just better in this moment, and it's not putting the cart in front of the horse. It's not saying that they're going to go back to the World Series this year, or that our over 92.5 win ticket's going to cash, or that them going back to the World Series ticket is going to cash that we got at LaBerge. But there's just signs that this team collectively from top to bottom are starting to play much better baseball, and that's a very good thing because it's very needed.
Yeah, I mean, the Verlander quote from when he came back telling the guys they need to get their head out of their ass, it was a little bit like, all right, dude, because I think, was it his first game back that he struggled? There's something where people threw that quote back into Verlander's face.
I think it was like his next 2 starts were awful.
Yeah, and then, I mean, like we saw yesterday, he still's got it. But at a certain point, that is what the Astros need to just stop doing. They just need to not be terrible in every extra inning or one run game. And they can play at the level that they have been and make one extra play per game or 2 extra plays per game. And we would be right in the four games back sweet spot that they were last year. So I understand why this might seem like it is kind of digging for, you know, the silver linings in anything, but it is true that if this team can just play competent baseball for any stretch of time, like, they will get back into this race at a point in the season where they still have time to make it up, because we've harped on, and honestly I was actually pretty critical of, because the Astros hadn't played any good baseball, that it doesn't matter that no one's ran away with the AL West. The Astros haven't actually done anything to think that they can play winning baseball. They're now showing the signs of a team that can play winning baseball. And with the fact that the Rangers just got swept, and I guess the Mariners are still only three games over 500. So now there is the, like, okay, I can see the path forward.
Well, think about it. If they do what we expect them to do, or what we want them to do over this next stretch, let's say they do, I think we said that win like four out of the five series, starting with Detroit. Let's say you're within five games by the time you play Seattle, May 27th, 28th, 29th, and 30th. You win that series, you're talking about a whole new season. And it's not just the lineup. Like Jordan's figuring it out, not looking super healthy, but figuring it out. Joey Loprofito continues to impress. He's hitting, at one point in yesterday's game, he was hitting over 300 so far in the season in the bigs. Jake Myers has been very good. They're getting Chaz McCormick back soon. Jose Urquidy made his first rehab start. Going into May 10th, over the last 15 days before that, the Astros' three big pitchers, Abreu, Presley, and Hader, over 16.1 innings. They had 28 strikeouts and 3 earned runs between the three of them. And that was going into May 10th. So it's got even better since then. You know, so, like, it's just, there are the arrow, if you're looking at it, like a graph, it's pointed way up. Can you dig out of the hole that you've got yourself onto? I don't know the answer to that question, but this weekend was just a very positive series for the Houston Astros. And you know, I get, like I said, I get the reservations, but let's see what happens over the next four games. I don't know, when do you think people, like, what does it take to really jump back in on the bandwagon?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it depends the nature of how they go about this next stretch of games, where if they're just, like, sweeping if they have, like, a four-game sweep against against Oakland, I think people will be back. So it is something where, if they win three out of four, are people bad? Like, if there's nothing they can prove against bad teams, or, I mean, even Detroit's not that bad of a team. They're basically a 500 team. If there's nothing they can prove against bad teams, then you are kind of waiting until the Seattle series at the end of the month. But at a certain point, it's just a math problem of, you just need to get closer to the Mariners. And to do that, you need to beat bad teams, because, I mean, honestly, I think the stretch from, the National Series to the Cubs Series, that is where the season became, like, absolutely, like, backs against the wall. And they responded in Colorado, and then they fell apart in those four games against the Mariners, or the last two games of the Mariners series and the first two games of the Yankees series. Mm-hmm. So maybe those are the two best teams they've played recently. So maybe there is some truth to that. But at the end of the day, if they can just beat these 500 teams like they beat the Tigers this weekend, they will be in a much better spot than they are right now.
All right, how do you feel about the Houston Astros? They take two out of three this weekend, but we've talked about the good stuff. We got to talk about Christian Javier, because I have questions. Was he ready? Did they rush him? Like what was happening on Saturday? Even the fact that they have pitchers who they said can't start in the cold, and he was out there in the cold on Saturday. I don't know. Why didn't Javier get the same treatment? We'll talk about his start from this weekend, because it's the biggest red flag of the weekend for sure. When we get back here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. This Saturday from noon to 3, myself, Cam Smith, one of our producers, and Brian McDonald will be live at Le Bourge from noon to 3, so we'll be broadcasting there. Come on. Hey, spend the weekend with us in Le Bourge. Come watch the Astros as they take on the... who do they play this weekend? Oh, it'll be Milwaukee. this weekend. So a little Brewers action going on. But we'll be at LaBerge, and you should be too. It's a great place to go when you want to bet on your Texas teams. They have 19 betting kiosks. You can download the ESPN Bet app as soon as you cross the Louisiana border, and you can bet on your phone. They have plenty of food, plenty of great food, plenty of televisions to watch games on. So whether it's the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, Major League Baseball, whatever you want, even early morning, you want to watch some Premier League, you can watch that as well. Creek Casino, inside LaBerge, nice steakhouse. It's an awesome spot to go to. So when you want to leave Texas and go bet on your Texas teams, make sure you do it at LaBerge Lake Charles.
ESPN 97.5. It's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Paul Gallant and Joe George.
Gallant George here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Sean Mapes, Joe George, and Austin Rodriguez with you here today. Paul Gallant will be back tomorrow here with us from the 713. I don't feel great about this team because they can't seem to beat any good teams. I agree. But when you look at their schedule, just like the next couple of weeks, you play Oakland, Milwaukee, and the Angels in Oakland. So right now, all you can do is beat the teams in front of you. You know, this is kind of, that's kind of reminiscent of the early season Texans talk that was going on. You know, like the Texans didn't beat anyone relevant until they beat Joe Burrow. They didn't beat a good team until they beat the Bengals and Joe Burrow. And the Astros are kind of in that moment right now. You have Milwaukee coming up. They are 24-16. And lead the NL Central. So that's one where, you know, eyes on that series this weekend. If you win 3 out of 4 versus the A's, I get why you still have those reservations. Then you see what happens when they play the Brewers, because that is a good baseball team. They're not a great baseball team. They're probably not as good as the Mariners or the Yankees, I would say, this season. But that will be a kind of a benchmark moment for them at this point.
Yeah, it's, I mean, the Tigers are 20-20. The Mariners are 22-19.
Yeah, but like my eyeballs tell me the Mariners are a way better baseball team.
Yeah,
than the
but I'm just saying, like, if we're doing the, you know, who's a good team, we're doing a lot of stuff based off of last year who was a good team.
You're right.
And you know who was a good team last year?
The Astros.
The Houston Astros.
I mean, they beat the Guardians 2 out of 3 games. And that was like 2 weeks ago. So it really doesn't mean much at this point.
Yeah. Again, when they played the Guardians, we're like, yeah, I guess they're one of the best teams. Yeah. Like, really, right now, the only teams that the Astros can prove it against are the Mariners and Rangers, which strictly off the back of last year, the Orioles and Yankees, and then if they play, like, the Braves or Dodgers. And that's it. That's the only team. So
because even, like, the
there's
Guardians.
There's 5 teams that, that you could say that you won't get hit with the, like, okay, sure. They beat these guys.
Because it's like, oh, they beat the Guardians 2 out of 3 a couple weeks ago. Well, you know what the Guardians did this weekend? They lost 3 out of 4 to the worst team in baseball, to the White Sox. So, like, it even that, like, will go back and stain your view of a series when you look back.
Yeah.
So, like, all you can do right now is beat the teams in front of you and slowly – and just try to get back to – slowly creep back to 500 and creep back to, you know, the top of this division and to make a race. But, you know, the one story that we haven't gotten into too much this weekend was obviously Christian Javier. He was just not good. He lasts an inning and a third, gives up 5 hits, 4 walks – 7 earned runs, 2 home runs. Now, Christian Javier was pretty good before he got hurt this year. I don't know if he just wasn't ready to come back, and they rushed him, and if maybe it was cold. Was that Fromber who they said couldn't come back when they played?
I thought it was Javier.
Was it Javier?
In Chicago, right?
Was that who it was?
When they played in Chicago, and then he... went on the, it was right before he went on the IL with his
That's right. You guys are wish casting obvious fanboys. 409, thanks for listening to the show for the first time. The Twitch would disagree that I'm a fanboy, but I love the text because it just makes me giggle. I'm probably the most, like, neutral person there is about the Houston Astros in the city. But yeah, Christian Javier was just not good.
No.
And I don't know why people are panicking. Like, this is like the people who I saw people like Justin Verlander's washed. Justin Verlander's old after his last start. Yes, we react to every single game and what you see in front of you because that's what we do
on a daily basis. Otherwise, like, why watch these games?
Yeah. But you don't have to make these massive proclamations every single time you see a disastrous outing. This isn't Hunter Brown. This isn't, you know, Spencer Arrigetti. Like, calling Justin Verlander old and washed after two bad starts and then yesterday happens makes you look foolish. Saying Christian Javier is overrated and is done on his first start back off an injury is insane. And I saw that all over social media yesterday. He was not good. Like, he was absolutely not good. But I don't believe that that's who he's going to be the rest of the year.
Yeah, it's also his first bad start of the season, basically. Like, the other four games that he started, he's given up zero earned runs, two and two. Those that's his first four starts this season. So I don't really have a lot of questions about him performance-wise. I don't think he'll become the new Hunter Brown, or that if Hunter Brown and him had a Freaky Friday-like swap situation when Javier came back off the IL. But yeah, I need another bad start before I start raising the alarm bells. And even then, you could say, is it because the Astros have mismanaged his injury in some way, or his comeback from it, his rehab in some way, or is this who he is now? Because based off of one start, that is too much. Just like if you're going to say that being more optimistic about this team after a 2-1 series win against a mediocre team is overreacting, then you also have to think that a guy making his first start off of injury and pitching a 1 1/3, and again, he gave up more runs. He's given up 11 earned runs his entire 2024 season, including the seven that he gets. So he gave up 4 earned runs in his first four starts this year. He gives up 7-1.
Yeah, I mean, he was barely touching like 90 consistently.
Yeah. So if you want to be concerned about the Astros' medical situation and the training staff, that is a fair criticism. But to say like he sucks now, That's aggressive.
Yeah, I guess like my question would be like why he didn't do a rehab start.
I don't remember him doing a rehab.
So start. Like, oh, I guess he did. Oh, okay. 8 days ago. Okay.
Okay.
He threw 65 pitches in that rehab start. Just like Arcidi had his rehab start yesterday. What I just find interesting is, I mean, look, maybe it's the severity of the injury. Arcidi is going to do at least two more. Mm-hmm. It sounds like where Christian Javier comes back after one, and he just didn't look effective. And I don't know why he was up there if they didn't feel like, they must have thought he was ready. But to treat Arcidi one way and Javier so differently, it just surprises me. And then at this point, like, I don't know why you feel comfortable with him out there if he's not touching 92 on a consistent basis. Like, he didn't look effective in any way in that start on Saturday. It's not the long term. I find it interesting. Like, they're taking Arcidi down one path and Javier down the other path. And yes, it's different injuries. Yes, I understand that. But like, yes, it's one start and we're being reactionary in this way. But he was hurt. I mean, he missed a month of the regular season. And just to put him out there like that just seems like a mistake.
Yeah, the contrast with Arcidi is the interesting part, where if you want to say that he wasn't ready, is it because the Astros rushed him back because of the state of the season? But then that doesn't make sense with the fact that Arcidi is going to make three, and it was proclaimed before he made one. Yeah, it was that he was going to do three or at least. And so, I don't know if they rushed him back. So it just might be, which is probably the worst option, is that it was just a misdiagnosis these guys just don't know what they're doing. So that's the like uncomfortable angle, is like this Astros training staff that's already had so many issues is still having those issues with getting guys ready.
All right. The Astros take 2 out of 3 versus the Tigers. Christian Javier, not great. The other thing that happened this weekend, I don't know if this is this isn't a big story. It's a little story. But it's interesting that, like, as the Astros, as we hope that they turn things around, Bob Nightingale just drops this little nugget about what's going on inside the clubhouse and around Joe Espada. We'll get into the next here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Gallant and George here on ESPN 97.5, 92.5. Sean and Joe with him with you today. Paul returns from vacation tomorrow. So Bob Nightingale put out a story, or just, you know, kind of a, it was a story on Chris Davis, and then there was all the stuff about what he was hearing at the end of the article. And he put this, the Houston Astros plan to give rookie manager Joe Espada plenty of time to see if they turn their season around, particularly with their pitching injuries. But two prominent players have privately expressed complaints about Espada's communication skills in recent weeks. If the Astros miss the postseason and decide to make a change during the winter, the two hottest managerial free agents this winter are Alex Cora of the Red Sox and Skip Schumacher of the Miami Marlins. Now, the first time I read this, like, I didn't read Bob's article, so I kind of was like, oh, like he's saying Cora and Cora might be an option to come back to Houston. Which, no. No. There's no chance. I would be stunned. If Joe Espada happened to get fired this offseason, I would be stunned if Alex Cora was the manager of the Houston Astros. This is the guy who is getting drunk and getting into fights on the bus or shouting matches with people part of your television crew, as we read in recent books. Like, I don't see Alex Cora coming back to be the manager of the Houston Astros. But it was more just like a statement of, like, who's available versus, like, the Astros actually, you know, being connected to these two teams. Do you make a big deal out of this story? Because this, to me, very much, Sean, feels like a little deal of, like, hey, man, like, the communication sucks. Let's improve it a little bit. It doesn't scream as a lost the clubhouse or anything like that.
Yeah, as much as any time you see a team plans to give rookie manager plenty of time and his job is definitely not in jeopardy, I always go like, well, the fact you have to say it, that worries me a little bit.
Yes.
The fact that it's even a question about whether he will get plenty of time to see if they turn their season around, that is a little bit of that. That's more, I guess, worrying to me, but that's also just kind of where the Astros are at in their season right now. So I don't have too much concern about it. The communication stuff, that isn't great. I don't really know how to take that, though, because is that complaints about his skills in general or skills in the recent weeks? Because it's phrased as two prominent players have privately expressed complaints about Espada's communication skills in recent weeks. Is it, again, an isolated incident or a, you know, the Yankee series, they didn't like his communication skills? I would need to know more and more.
There's not a lot of information.
More in-depth reporting before it becomes big deal.
Yeah, because my first inclination is, oh, he's not communicating well to guys like Alex Bregman after moving to sixth in the lineup.
That
to me is like what else? Like, that's the first thing that pops in my head because there's so little information. Just this little nugget that two prominent players are complaining, and I was like, oh, people are not being told effectively in their mind
that they're being moved down the lineup because they're hitting 200.
Yeah. Or, you know, whatever Jose Abreu issues. Like, it's stuff like that, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It to me, there's not enough information here where I thought the Chaz McCormick story last year, I thought was more interesting just because there was more to it.
Yeah.
Than this. This is such a little nugget. Now, my guess is, like, we'll see some follow-ups from this, like, whether it's from Bob or another reporter. But I also wouldn't discredit Bob because while I don't think he's very accurate with a lot of things, in the past life, I've joked about him putting him on the banned list because he's so bad at reporting. The one team he's very plugged in on is the Houston Astros. He clearly has a line of communication with somebody in the front office because he's pretty accurate a lot of times when he has little nuggets. But it's not enough. From the 832, AJ Hinch, he just signed a contract extension. I doubt it. Maybe if they didn't give him the extension, then it would have been a possibility, but he just signed it. I think it was like last offseason or not that long ago. I would love AJ Hinch to come back. But I don't foresee that.
Yeah. That's the second part is this like managerial search where they both have jobs. I just don't understand the, yeah. like, the framing of that is just so weird. If the Astros miss the postseason and decide to make a change, so they're saying, so it's an if they make the postseason, but even if they make the postseason, they still will then have to decide if they want to make a change. The two hottest candidates, managerial free agents this winter, are Cora and Skip Schumacher. Yeah. So it's like,
this is like a statement.
Yeah, and there's just so many, like, there's a two-part if to start the, here are just two guys that should be available to be managed. So there's just a lot of, again, like we're saying, with the difference between this and the Chaz McCormick story from last year is that it's just so much more vague. And at a certain point, that is kind of the job. This is just kind of a nugget column where it's just a little bit, a couple of nuggets from every team that this national reporter has versus, you know, what Chandler wrote with in The Athletic with the Chaz thing, where it was like a reported piece about McCormick and the playing time or the lack thereof that he feels like he's getting. So some of it is just, this is just a headline, not a headline grab. I'm not saying anything like, you know, disparaging towards Bob Nightingale. It's just that is what this is. This is just a bullet point in a longer article where all we have is this bullet point. So it is easy to make kind of a mountain out of molehill. I'm not there yet, though.
Yeah, that's I agree. I don't think there's any chance Joe Espada doesn't make it through the season. That would just really surprise
they,
me.
They would have to get worse.
Yeah. I go back to what like Jeremy Booth, when he was on, he pointed out, he tried to point out the fact that Joe Espada interviewed for all these jobs and never got one. Mm. I remember bringing this up last year.
Baseball Eric Bieniemy.
Yeah. Like, is there something to it? No. Like, with Eric Bieniemy in the NFL, there was all these little stories that went around with it, right? Like, he was dropping F-bombs as he's meeting with Arthur Blank and the Atlanta Falcons and their ownership group, and it's turning them away because they don't like how brass he was in person and not more respectful when he's in a conversation with the owners. He talked to the owners like he would talk to the players. We never got that stuff with Joe Espada. A lot of times, managerial positions that he was interested in were being filled while the Astros were still in the playoffs. Not all of them, but some of them. I don't think there's much to that. If the Astros miss the playoffs this season and they miss by 10-plus games, yes, there is a chance that Jim Crane will treat Joe Espada like the fall guy. There's a chance he'll treat Dana Brown like the fall guy. They're not going to blame themselves, but I would be stunned if there was an in-season change. That's why when Bob says plenty of time, it gives the insinuation like he might not make it through the year.
Yeah.
But I just, that would really shock me. That would really, really shock me.
I mean, it's like the Bob Nightingale part about if they were to miss the postseason and if they were to look for a new manager, there's so many things that have to happen before you get to who would the candidate be. It's kind of like this with him getting fired, with the idea that Espada could get fired in the middle of the season, is that so many things would have to go wrong before then that maybe right now it would be surprising. But if the three different things that need to happen, mm-hmm. then it could be more possible. If this team does go like 75 and 97, I think I did the math right. If they have this like terrible year, then that could be an opportunity for the change. But until that actually happens, I just don't see it.
I think they have to finish last in the AL West. And I think Jose Altuve has to be one of these players that is talking
Coach
to
Killer.
Crane. Like if it's Alex Bregman.
If it's Alex Bregman
and Jose Abreu, like oh well.
Yeah, Ryan Pressly and Jose Abreu. Or
guys who are not going to be on the team next year.
Yeah. Although I will say Ryan Presley shouldn't complain about the communication skills, because it was very clear that he was going to be the eighth inning guy. Yeah. He could be mad about the decision he made. It was communicated effectively.
One other quick note from Bob that I just thought was of interest to fans of baseball. He does say, and I guess I don't know if this is his opinion or what's reporting, but he says that the automated strike zone is definitely coming within the next 2 years to baseball. Good.
Yeah, that's not. I like the challenge.
I thought they would have tried that first.
Yeah. So that's my one quibble with it. But yeah, ultimately it is, I think, a step in the right direction. It's also, it just goes further to show no sport, like, sneakily, I guess, other than college football, maybe has changed their sport more in the last, like, 5 years than baseball. If you really think about it, like, baseball, for the longest time, I know for us growing up, it was always like, they never change anything. It's the slowest moving sport that they drag their feet on every single change they could possibly do. It's like, since, like, 2019, really?
When the pandemic hit.
Yeah, they've drastically changed a lot of things, and this would be another one where it is, yes, it is a big change. I understand how some people would be apprehensive for it. It's not perfect. I would say it's not perfect, but I do still think it's a step in the right direction.
Your math was off.
Yeah, I know. It's 65 and 97.
I mean, they go 65 and 97. See, I wasn't sure which way you were going to go. If you're going to take wins away or losses away.
Yeah. No.
You took the wins away.
Yeah. If they lose almost 100 games, like, he's going to get fired.
Yeah. Because Junior Bronco, you know, brings up NFL has killed special teams. That still is.
They kind of brought it back.
They're kind of bringing it back. They're trying to. You know, like, people think that they're going to be making plays with this kickoff return with the way it's going to be designed. I think they're trying to salvage it. And that, where I view, that was more about concussions than it was about the game of football itself. Like, about, like, just changing the game aesthetically. That was to prevent concussions. So, like, while I agree with Junior Bronco, the NFL has obviously significantly changed special teams. That, to me, was more reactionary to a report that was this, like, massive story for a year, and then no one cares about concussions anymore.
But baseball added a pitch clock and now has
bigger, a runner on second base.
Bigger bases, the runner on second base in extra innings, the number of times you can throw over.
I thought the one they were going to keep, too, was the...
They've shortened mound visits. Yeah. Like, they've done a lot to change the game.
I thought they were going to... I'm glad the one they didn't keep, because I hated it the most during the pandemic season, was if you ended up with a doubleheader playing 7-inning games. I didn't like that.
No, that was stupid.
I thought that was stupid.
It was stupid at the time.
I'm very glad that that's the one thing that they definitely didn't keep, because I remember who... I don't remember the pitcher.
Oh, it was... was it Bumgarner?
I think it was. You're right. I think it was Bumgarner.
His last good game ever.
He threw a no-hitter that didn't count as a no-hitter.
Because it was seven innings. Yeah. Yeah, no.
I still think that's one of the dumbest things, because it was not like it was a rainout. If it was a rainout and there's supposed to be two more innings, I get it. Baseball told them they couldn't play the final six outs. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is the dumbest thing we've done in sports, not counting this as a no-hitter.
Yeah.
Like, you took away the game. He threw a no-hitter. It should count.
Yeah, the length of the game was seven innings. He gave up no hits for the length of the game.
Yeah. That's a no hitter.
If you want to put it in the, I guess, permanent record of where they have all the no hitters. I actually don't know if that book even exists, or if there's a plaque in Cooperstown somewhere where it has all the no hitters. But if you want to say, like, parenthetically, in a 7-inning game, that's fine. It was a no hitter.
Yeah, 100% was. All right. Over the weekend, the other big thing that happened: the NBA draft lottery. And it worked out mightily, mightily well for the Houston Rockets. We get to that next year on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5. This is Gallant and George
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Now back to Paul and Joe inside the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
Sean, Joe, and Austin here with you today. Paul Gallant returns from vacation tomorrow. We think he's sitting in the airport right now because he's texting us for the first time this weekend. So he's clearly ready to get, he's clearly like not with his family.
As someone who's worked with Paul for a couple years now, I know vacation Paul, he's not normally on I would say on call for a lot of sports related things. And yes, he's in the last, what, 2 hours? Right? Yeah, about last 2 hours. Since 10 o'clock, he sent us two different stories. One about the Jets trying to hire a new offensive coordinator, and Paul Pierce accidentally, or maybe not accidentally, dropping an N-bomb on Undisputed. So that
yeah, I saw that. We're going to save that one for in case you missed it. Paul, that one, that's one of those stories, Sean, that like I want Paul here. So we're going to save that. We're going to save that story for in case you missed it.
Yeah, yeah, I don't really have anything to say about it other than probably shouldn't do that. I don't know.
So same, and that's why we need Paul, because Paul's going to have more things to say, I'm sure, about that story than
I guess my initial thought is shout out to Undisputed that people noticed what is being said on that show, because that implies people are watching.
No. I'm sure like the aggregator who found this is the one watching, or like the five people, because their ratings are awful. And plus that show is just all the Fox content is just not good. I have not, unless it's on social media, I do not watch any of those television shows. It almost reminds me of, Kendrick Perkins saying he's never seen any draft prospects. I was like, I just, whatever, man, like you do you, you make a lot of money, but like you're not, I don't think he's good enough to do that. That's one of my, like, I like Perk. I think he can be entertaining. But he's not good enough to do that.
It's a little bit of also like, why are you even putting him in that position where it's like,
yeah, that's bad management.
It's in the middle of the playoffs. Like, it's understandable if Kendrick Perkins isn't watching YouTube cut-ups of these French dudes.
Yeah.
And this guy, I think he's playing in Australia. Like, you have a draft analyst. Just put a draft analyst there. Put Woj, a draft analyst, and a host. That's really all you need.
Yeah, where's Jonathan Givony? Like, he's your draft analyst, and they mentioned him 100 times during the lottery. Like, why don't you just put him on television?
I don't know.
But hey, you need Park out there.
Is he just terrible on camera?
Probably. So the Rockets land the third pick in the draft. The other pick ended up going to Oklahoma City. I thought before the draft also it was funny how they're like, yeah, the Rockets might get two picks. Okay. We knew that was highly unlikely. Obviously, they didn't. So they move up from where they were slotted at 9 to 3rd. And immediately, Woj goes on television and says, they're going to listen. They're going to listen. They're going to be open to offers on this deal. But Rafael Stone, here he is talking that they're more likely to draft at 3 than they were at 9.
I think the caveat to it always was we'd be willing to move it if we got something that was worth us moving it. And but at the same time, valuing the player we think we'd bring in. So probably at least a slightly better chance that we'll like the player more at 3, probably a much better chance that we'll like the player more at 3. Or at least we'll, sometimes that's not true. A higher likelihood that we'll be very interested in a player at 3. That's probably the better way of saying it, but also potentially maybe others will too. And so maybe other teams will be more aggressive in trying to trade in for that. So
it's not the draft you want to land the third pick.
Yes.
Because it's not a great draft.
I was talking to Dell about this earlier, where if you get the third pick in like the last 3 drafts, you feel way better about it than getting the 3 pick in this one. So this is not your average third overall pick. It's chances are going to be a little bit worse. Although, I don't know. There's always surprises in the draft. Like, 2013 draft was a terrible draft, and still kind of is, even looking back on it. But at the time, it was viewed as terrible. Giannis was picked 15th, and I think Gobert was in the 20s. So, like, you still can't
find guys. There's always good
players.
Yeah. There will be players selected in the draft in 2024 that are all-stars.
Yes.
For sure. They might go in the second round.
I think the only draft that's never had an all-star is the 2000 draft, I want to say. Yikes. I think it's 2000.
I do find, looking back to December, Tillman Fertitta, Udoka, and others met with the media in an empty warehouse as they're building their practice facility. And, you know, one of the things that Tillman said was that it's time to start winning. But also, we have enough young guys on this team. And that's kind of where I'm at. Like, I think it's great that they got the third pick. But I look at their roster, and I don't know, like, what's the purpose? Like, there's a bunch of people mocking them to take a point guard from Kentucky. Why? Yeah. You just drafted Amen Thompson. You have Jalen Green at shooting guard. You have Alperen Sengun. You have Jabari Smith. You have Cam Whitmore. You have Tari Eason. You have six young, good players who, like, yeah, maybe not superstars, all of them. Like, who knows how good these guys will be? You might not have any superstars on your team. So maybe you should take one, the argument would be, with the third pick. But I don't know. I don't know if I see the need to add another player at three. It's not the end of the world for me. Like, if they take one, I just would view this team as in a better position to trade this asset for a veteran player who can make an impact right away, which we talked about on Friday a little bit with Donovan Mitchell, versus just keeping the third pick.
Yeah, no, I agree that at a certain, I mean, we talk about this core six so much. That's already, like, kind of stretching it as far as a core goes, because literally you can't put all of them on the court at the same time.
Yeah.
Like, that normally cores are like a big three or a core four, maybe. And then to drop a core six, it's like, well, we're stretching it a little bit. And now, you know, if theoretically you want to use this draft pick, now we're talking about a core seven. Chances are that's not going to be the best allocation of all these resources. It's just keep drafting 19-year-olds, and you're keep trying to get older. You're always trying to mature as a team. Where at certain points, let's just trade for a guy who's ready-made, ready to take that next step with these guys. That's where, you know, some of these veteran options are more attractive. If this was a draft where it felt like there's three great prospects, we'd probably feel differently. If this was last year's draft and you feel like you can get either Brandon Miller or Scoot Henderson Amen Thompson went fourth in that draft. So any of those guys, you'd be like, oh, now it's a debate about whether you want to trade it or not. I still feel pretty firmly in the trade this pick. Not as much as it was when they're nine, where I was like, if they make this pick, it was a failure. Where now I can see a world where they still want to make the pick and it's not an absolute failure. It's just it's not what I'd prefer.
I mean, if they fall in love with a prospect, they fall in love with a prospect and they should take him.
Yeah. And right? Want them to be open-minded.
Like, just be open-minded. Like, that's all I really ask for in this situation is do your job, Rafael Stone, evaluate these guys. If there is a big man per se, you know, that, like, you fall in love with and you want to bring him in because it's going to bring better defense for you, or you want to bring in someone. They do need shooting still, but, like, how many kids coming out of college are like, yeah, that guy can shoot the basketball? So
it's also, even if he can shoot the basketball, can he play defense?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because you got to play a certain style of basketball to fit in here now.
Yeah, and so that's where these shooters, all, if they were a shooter who could play defense, guess what? This wouldn't be talked about as a terrible draft with no one at the top of it. If there's a guy who's ready to step in for a team that hopes to make the playoffs and be a part of the rotation.
All right, how do you feel about the Rockets getting the third pick? What do you want to see them do with that pick? We'll power rank our draft wishes a little bit later in the show, and we'll kind of catch up on what's going on in the NBA as well when we get back here. It's Gallant and George on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.